Hello, this is Dr. Nawaz Habib, and today we will be mapping vagal nerve stimulation on the 15-minute matrix.
Welcome to the 15-minute matrix. I'm Andrea Nakayama, functional medicine nutritionist and your host. This is the podcast that brings you bite-sized insights and lessons on how to use the most important tool in functional medicine and functional nutrition. Today on the 15-Minute Matrix, I'll be talking with Dr. Nawaz Habib. Dr. Habib is an author, speaker, and functional medicine practitioner who empowers his patients to make small, sustainable changes to blind spots which may have been overlooked by other healthcare practitioners. He has found that these are the missing pieces which have a long-lasting impact on energy levels, immune function, digestive, metabolic, and hormone health. Dr. Habib was first introduced to functional medicine during a chance encounter with Sachin Patel when he was dealing with various health conditions related to obesity. He has since transformed his health and his life and is driven to help his patients overcome their own health conditions. Dr. Habib's book, Activate Your Vagus Nerve, helps patients and practitioners see through the mess of information, empowering readers with simple practices. Welcome, Dr. Nawaz. I'm so excited to talk to you about this subject.
Thank you so much for having me, Andrea.
So vagal nerve stimulation, the vagus nerve, such an important nerve in the body. Start us out with just explaining why it's so important and what it is.
As we all know, the vagus nerve is probably one of the longest nerves in the body and, in my opinion, the most important nerve for creating wellness, creating health, and allowing our bodies to actually do what they were meant to do, to actually function at an optimal level. The vagus nerve is so important, but we tend to think that it's a parasympathetic nerve and that it has one function. It's oftentimes kind of missed that the parasympathetic system is just one small component of what the vagus nerve actually does. Vagus actually has four specific different components. And the parasympathetic component, where we're looking at the reduction of heart rate, where we're looking at activating the rest and digest system, is actually probably about 15% of the function of the vagus nerve.
Wow.
The vast majority of it, about 80% of the function of vagus, is actually afferent, coming from the gut, from the liver, from the pancreas, from the stomach, all the way up to the brain. So it's actually sending information upwards towards the brain. And so it is that direct route for connecting the second brain to the first brain.
And to think about the fact that that's the majority of its function. So if we're thinking about the vagal nerve and the fact that it's a nerve, and we start out in the structural arena, are there instances where somebody is having structural issues or structural impacts have really impacted the function of the vagal nerve?
There's multiple reasons why the vagus nerve may not be functioning optimally. Structurally, one of the most common occurrences is if somebody's had surgery, especially surgery in their abdomen. It's very common to have an issue like gastroparesis following a surgery of the stomach or of the gallbladder, because for whatever reason during that surgery, one of the branches of the vagus nerve may have actually been clipped. And so there can be structural issues following a surgery, but there can also be structural issues based on where the nerve is actually running. So we know that the vagus nerve runs with the carotid artery and the jugular vein, which should tell you and lend to you the importance of the vagus nerve, just because it's with such important structures in the neck. But if those structures are restricted by any means because of any neck motion issues or issues with the actual movement patterns of the neck, then we can have issues occur in the vagus nerve due to those secondary structural problems as well.
I wanted to start us there just with your background from a chiro perspective, because I'm sure you're then seeing the upstream factors in the structural integrity that impact all those other areas in the full body systems. Are there any other major triggers that you see to vagal nerve issues other than surgeries or accidents? Are there any particular antecedents where where there might be structural damage, possibly even birth?
Birthing trauma is actually probably one of the most commonly overlooked concerns with structural damage. And for it to be an antecedent, it absolutely could be a birth style trauma or childhood traumas as well, with kids that have necks that may not have been cared for as much as they should have been. And I have a 20-month-old myself, and so I understand that infants may not have that head control that you kind of hope for. And from time to time, things can occur during that infant stage where neck motion is not optimized. And so structural issues can certainly occur early on in childhood, and that can actually develop into poor function of the vagus nerve as time goes on.
Yeah, it's really, really fascinating to think how we may be doing all this work to try to solve gut issues, right? So many of us in functional medicine, and particularly in functional nutrition, all our focus is on the gut when there may actually be nerve damage. So what are those downstream impacts to the gut in particular that you see that are related to vagal nerve issues?
There's a few very common concerns, and one of the most common ones is going to be low stomach acid production. Hypochlorhydria is probably one of the most common things that I see with patients that come in with vagus nerve issues. And so that symptom of not being able to produce enough stomach acid, not being able to break down your food correctly using those chemical pathways, is telling us that we don't have the right amount of vagus nerve stimulation to the parietal cells in the stomach to do the job that they need to do. And then secondarily, we'll have constipation or diarrhea movement through the gut itself, through the small intestine, large intestine, because we're not able to regulate the peristaltic motions of the gut. We'll also see pancreatic issues. So diabetes is a very common occurrence. We know that, but digestive enzymes may not be produced because vagus nerve stimulates the pancreas. It also stimulates liver function and gallbladder function. So cholestasis and people having gallstones and having gallbladders removed is actually another huge sign of vagus nerve poor activation.
What about the vagal nerve and the immune or inflammatory balance? Is there a state where internal inflammation is impacting the function of the nerves?
This is where we don't realize the extent to which vagus actually has a major effect. The major neurotransmitter used by vagus is acetylcholine, and that is actually regulating the cholinergic anti-inflammatory pathway. And so what we're actually able to do with proper vagus nerve stimulation or activation is we're able to limit the amount of inflammation in all of those organs that I mentioned earlier, because the cholinergic anti-inflammatory pathway actually regulates or downregulates the immune cells when an inflammatory response is occurring. So yes, absolutely. Inflammation is triggering and it's necessary when it does come up. But if we can't control that, if we can't put the foot on the brake, then we're going to have an issue with inflammation then spreading and becoming chronic and becoming systemic.
So I want to get to all your secrets for vagal nerve activation that we can read more about in your book, linked in the show notes. And I'm excited to focus there. But before we do, can we spend just another section in the soup area of the matrix, that central part? Is there anything else that we didn't touch on that you see as a major implicator in vagal nerve activation or impediment?
I would say that anything vagus nerve related as a mediator for sure. And it tends to actually have a lot of effect that we miss in the detoxification process. So liver function, we know that the liver has hundreds of functions, but the detoxification process is probably the most important one. And so if we're not having a strong anti-inflammatory effect from our vagus nerve or a strong afferent effect between our liver and our brain, then we're not able to regulate detoxification pathways and actually tell our brain what's happening internally in the liver, what's happening internally in the gut through gastrointestinal status, as well as immune and inflammatory balance that we spoke about already.
Yeah, so it really does become this really obvious upstream factor that could be the missing piece or one of the missing pieces that's being overlooked when we're trying to get the body to perform, but we're not really paying attention to that underlying root, that big, big root in the body. So let's head over to the skill section on the right side of the matrix. I know in the morning I try to do my meditation and do a little vibration with my voice and my sounding. Is there anything in that arena that you recommend to patients?
Definitely. So this is where the other two components of vagus nerve actually come into play really, really well. You spoke about humming or chanting or having some vibration occurring in your throat. The vagus nerve has a motor output to the laryngeal muscles, all of the muscles that activate the vocal cords. And so one of the most common signs that I see is people coming in and they have a very monotonous voice. Their tone does not raise or lower like they should. And so when they come in with the monotone voice, I can tell them pretty much immediately that their vagus nerve is not functioning well. And so one of the first things I'll get them to do is what you're doing, is the humming and chanting and getting that vibration occurring in the throat. In order to activate those muscles, we get them to do kind of humming, chanting when they're doing their meditation, which is why Om is such an important and strong kind of focus in Hindu-based meditation in that sense, because what it does is it's stimulating the motor aspect of vagus and keeping you in that rest, digest, calm state, and actually allowing your meditation to get stronger, which is actually quite cool.
It's kind of amazing when I think about cultural shifts. Like if you think about voice and tonality and where our kids are speaking now, the different vibrations in the voice. I mean, I have a teenager, and just to think either whether it's more monotone or that there's that low vibration that they do at the end of their sentences, I don't even think I can do it. But I wonder, like, what are we doing as we have cultural or societal shifts to the body and the body's function? It's just interesting to think about, because the history of chanting or saying Om is so ancient and likely had functional purposes.
As we know, everything in functional medicine is rooted in ancient wisdom, right? And so not just taking the dietary and nutritional components, but taking into account the practices that they were doing back then without knowing that they were activating the vagus nerve. They knew that chanting Om or having that vibration occur was actually having a very positive effect on health and how the body was functioning.
Yeah, it's kind of phenomenal to think about how survival of the fittest changes as we become a culture that is able to live with more multifactorial symptoms and somehow staying alive, but also suffering at the same time. What else in the skills arena besides chanting can we be recommending that our clients and patients do to support that activation?
On the daily practices, one of the biggest areas that's missed is pharyngeal muscles as well. So the posterior pharyngeal muscles and the muscles that activate the gag reflex are very, very strongly innervated by vagus. And so getting our patients to do a gag reflex every time that they're brushing, where they just kind of take their brush to the back of their throat and activate that gag reflex. If they're not actively creating a motor reflex with that, then that's a sign that vagus really does need to be trained. And so that is a very simple daily thing. We're already brushing our teeth twice a day, so why not just go and activate the gag reflex at the same time? And then gargling is the next best thing as well, where we can put our brush down and keep a glass beside our sink every morning and every evening. And we take a warm glass of water with some salt, help make it a little bit antibacterial and break up some of that biofilm and plaque in the back of our throats. And we gargle really, really hard to the point where we actually start to tear. That's a sign. If you actually start to have your lacrimal glands activated, that's a sign that you're actually expressing enough power inside the nuclei of the vagus nerve to get that activation, to have that positive effect on vagus nerve itself.
I love it. These are great clinical pearls that we can be bringing in. Any other one tip that practitioners could take away, start trialing in themselves and then bringing into their practices?
Breathing is absolutely the biggest component that's missed. We've been trained over time, and I'm sure you see this with a lot of patients, with a lot of practitioners as well, that we're not actually breathing correctly. And really controlling our breath is one of the best ways to activate and control the autonomics. It's our one window to really make that occur. What I get patients to do is put one hand on their chest and put one hand on their belly, close their eyes, sit up straight, and try to take a deep breath. And if the hand that's on their chest is the one that's moving, then that's a sign that they're not breathing correctly. We should be using our diaphragm to breathe. The phrenic nerve should be activating the diaphragm, and that's having a feedback control on our vagus nerve activation. So we should be moving that bottom hand, the hand that's on our belly, where we're having that full diaphragmatic opening, and we're able to allow the vagus to actually calm down. You'll actually notice if you check your heart rate, when you're exhaling, you'll notice your heart rate actually decreases, and that's because of vagal stimulation of the heart. And so heart rate variability levels go up as we exhale versus when we inhale. And heart rate variability is that one amazing tool that we can use to dictate whether vagus nerve is doing the job that it needs to or not.
What kind of outcomes do you see from introducing this type of clinical intervention?
I have a patient that recently just emailed me actually today who's doing fantastically. She had introduced a lot of the vagus nerve exercises for issues surrounding IBS and autoimmunity. And so what we had her do was to actually melt tape at night. So she was making sure to breathe through her nose, which helped with a lot of her issues with the back of her throat. She had some issues having frequent colds and immune activation and not able to breathe really well at night. So melt taping was a great tool for her. But then we were able to add in the gargling, the humming, the chanting, the deep breathing exercises, and also got her to do some auricular acupuncture, which is going to cover that fourth section. So acupuncture in the ear will get that sensory activation of vagus, which is that fourth missing piece of the vagus nerve function overall. So having auricular acupuncture is a great tool. And what happened with her was her IBS symptoms essentially disappeared, and her autoimmunity issues are significantly better than when she initially had come in. And that was about 6 months ago.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Dr. Navaz. I really appreciate you sharing your wisdom and all of these clinical pearls with everybody here today.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
The 15-Minute Matrix is brought to you by me, Andrea Nakayama, and the Functional Nutrition Alliance. The 15-Minute Matrix team includes my son, Gilbert Nakayama, and Carla Schaefer on sound production, Renee Hunt, Natalie Merrill, and Christine Shook. You can visit us and hear more episodes at 15minutematrix.com. And if you'd like to be notified each time there's a new podcast episode, please go to 15minutematrix.com/notify. We'll be sure to drop into your inbox with a super short reminder that a new episode is ready for you. You also have an open invitation to email us. I really want to know who you'd like to hear on the podcast and what you'd like to see mapped on the 15-Minute Matrix. You can always email us at ask@15minutematrix.com.